And we continue at 106 in the afternoon. Talk Radio 790 KABC, broadcasting live in exile from the Morongo Casino Resort and Spa Living Room Studios. And it's time to fully reopen the state of California for business. Mr. Randy Wang's at the sports desk in Culver City.
John, of all the strange takes from different organizations about Elon Musk's takeover of Twitter, the LA Times might have the strangest. Here's a column. With Elon Musk in charge, it's the beginning of the end for Black Twitter.
And who was the author of that piece?
You know what? When I print these things, for some reason, it doesn't show the author. Let me tell you real
quick. That has to be Erica Smith.
I believe it is Erica Smith.
Who is the author of Larry Elder is the Black Face of White Supremacy.
She's a special one. Oh, she was the one that co-hosted the debate with Alex Michelson with the mayor candidates, and every time she got to ask a question, it was, why are cops killing people?
And she comes from the Sacramento Bee. So prior to all of this, she's responsible for the coverage that we read from the state capitol.
But my question to you, John, is when you write a column like this, is Erica Smith about to get a big old pay raise from Nika?
Probably so. 800-222-KABC is the phone number, 1-800-222-5222. It is a pleasure to welcome our next guest to the program. He is an assemblyman representing the suburbs of Sacramento. He's also a candidate for Congress up in Northern California. You can get him online at electkevinkiley.com and follow him on Twitter at KevinKileyCA. Assemblyman Kevin Kiley, welcome.
Hey, John. Great to be with you as always.
Thanks so much for stopping by. Well, let's start out by talking about the failure of the California legislature to give California motorists just a little bit of a break on the cost of gasoline. The governor, Gavin Newsom, even went so far as to endorse a proposal that would block a gasoline tax from being implemented on the people of California. But the two Tonys, Tony Rendon and Tony Atkins, said no. And Californians are going to pay more at the pump because of it. How could the legislature not get on board with this?
Well, because it's the California legislature, and so there is this sort of sense that common sense idea, an idea that would help people that has enjoyed bipartisan support in other states, is just anathema to our legislators. And, you know, the reason is no mystery. They are sort of allergic to any measure that would result in a loss of revenue to the state. The impetus is always to collect more and more and more revenue, which is why, to the extent they're willing to do anything, they prefer rebates, although who knows if that's even going to happen. At least then the money still comes into the government coffers, and then they get to decide how to dole it out.
Newsom supported this proposal, yet could not persuade Democrats in the legislature to get on board. Was he engaged in this legislation, or was this a thing where he just publicly took a position and didn't really put his weight behind it?
I didn't see any evidence that he was engaged. I mean, I think that he threw this out in January saying, oh, we're going to do a gas tax holiday. And everyone said, well, great. Okay. A gas tax. That's what I've been asking for. But it turned out he was just going to stop another 3-cent increase. And then that turns out to be too much to ask. The legislature isn't even willing to do that. It's not clear at all if Newsom actually wanted this or not. It's not clear if he really invested much political capital in trying to move the legislature in that direction. But this is where we are. Legislature has now voted against my bill to suspend the gas tax in its entirety, 51 cents a gallon. They've rejected that 4 separate times, and that insult to injury, they're now saying that we're going to raise the gas tax another 3 cents on you starting on July 1st.
Can you explain to the audience, because we're so far removed from what goes on in Sacramento, that people really don't understand how the sausage is made and what kind of dirty tricks actually happen on a regular basis. But there is an assemblywoman from down here in Southern California representing Glendale by the name of Laura Friedman, who tried to take your gas tax bill and make it the exact opposite of what you intended it to be, and did so through amendments. Can you explain exactly what they tried to do to your bill?
Yes, it was pretty amazing. The third time that they voted against this bill, just my bill, to suspend the gas tax, they thought they'd pull a trick to try to get back at me for introducing it in the first place and making them vote, where they stripped out the contents entirely and turned it into a massive tax increase and tried to sort of put it under my name. And so when I asked the assemblywoman that you just mentioned whether she'd put her name on it, even though she was recommending that the entire committee vote for it and herself voted for it and was kind of behind this whole maneuver, she said, oh, no, I'm not willing to put my name on it. Well, this sort of blew up in their faces, and it was incredibly embarrassing for her and for the legislators who were behind this, so much so that they ended up having to backtrack several days later and basically did a special vote to strike the bill from the file to erase the evidence that they'd ever tried to do this.
As someone who has a front row seat to all of this going on, how bad do you think gas prices could be here in California? What do you think is the worst case scenario?
Well, I mean, the worst case scenario sort of keeps getting worse. I mean, California right now has the highest gas taxes our highest gas prices in the country by far. And a big part of that is because of our gas tax. I mean, I think that last I checked, Nevada was the next closest and they pay 70 cents a gallon less. And everything that we do from a policy perspective in this state makes energy costs more expensive, whether it's the taxes, whether it's the regulations, whether it's the limits on domestic production. And so there is no sign that anything is going to, bring our prices in line with the rest of the nation anytime soon.
You know, when you talk to people down here about the problems and the failures of the state, the same subjects come up over and over and over again. The high cost of living, which includes the gasoline prices and everything related to that, is certainly at the top three. Crime and homelessness. Yet when you hear Gavin Newsom speak, or even other elected officials here in California, they want to talk about pronouns, or they want to talk about global warming, or they want to talk about subjects that have nothing to do with what's top of mind right now with the people who actually live here. In Sacramento, when you deal with these people, do they understand how much the public is concerned about crime and homelessness and the high cost of living? Or do they spend their time talking about pronouns and climate change up there too?
Well, sure. They talk about all those things. They try to use those sort of radical wedge type issues as a smokescreen to distract from the failures to govern in any and to take care of the basic things that government is supposed to do. You know, they say that they can sort of make headlines with new levels of perversity in terms of how far we're going to go on all of these hot button issues. Then I think they think that's going to take attention away from the fact that we have the highest poverty in the nation with the highest taxes. We have the worst regulations. We have failing public schools. Our roads are a mess and so forth. But frankly, it is not working because people across the state are living with these things every day. And that's why I think you see sort of the winds of change are growing stronger and stronger, to the point that even in a state like California, I think you could see a significant movement in the other direction this year.
One of the things that has been a constant in Sacramento, for whatever reason, is that Assembly Republicans have picked horrible leaders to run that caucus. And because they have horrible leaders running that caucus, the members don't all vote together, and sometimes they'll vote for things like cap and trade and other legislative initiatives that make life worse for their constituents. It seems like now you guys finally have a good leader in James Gallagher. We had him on the show a couple of weeks ago, and he seems to be the best one that you guys have picked in a very long time. How important is it going to be for that caucus and for Republicans in Sacramento to have a strong leader as we march towards the November elections?
Well, it's fantastic. I mean, James Gallagher is a tremendous leader. He's a fighter. He and I have been fighting against Newsom for the last couple years, and now he's sort of infused that fighting spirit into our entire caucus. And, I think that the Republicans representing us at the Capitol here are doing better now than at any time in my experience in the legislature. I really think that, we're taking a stand on these issues and we're getting results. We're forcing their hand. We're applying pressure. So I think that's a great credit to James Gallagher, to Scott Wilk, who's the Senate Republican leader. And I think that ultimately, though, we're just channeling the movement of citizens that has been growing across the state.
Well, there are so few voices of sanity up there that if you have a certain number of seats, you can't have any deadwood. You can't afford to. And that doesn't mean that these members all have to be living on cable news or radio or writing op-eds in the newspapers, but they all should be showing up to these committee hearings prepared. They should all be grilling all of these state officials and these people testifying before these committees, because you can move the needle if you show up and you do your job properly. But it seems like there was this defeatist attitude that set in for a very long time, where the attitude was, well, we don't have the votes to win the legislative battles, so why even bother? And that's the wrong attitude to have.
Well, sure. I think that that has been an attitude that has prevailed among some for some time. It is a defeatist attitude. It is a sense of, well, we don't have the numbers. We're outnumbered. They have their hands on every lever of power. They're corrupt, they're abusive, they're just going to do what they want, and so what are we to do? Well, you can actually do things if you do things, if you take action, if you force the issue, if you put them on the spot, if you, look for opportunities to move the ball forward. And I think that's what we're showing right now. I mean, even this sort of pie-in-the-sky $500, whatever it is, rebate, thing they're doing and claiming it's about helping people with gas prices, that never would have even been on the table if we hadn't forced their hand by making them vote on this, on the gas tax issue. So I think that, part of it is trying to actually stop all of these bad things and get some good things done at the Capitol, but also, bring attention, public attention to all of the failures here, drawing that line between the deteriorating conditions in the state of the state and the failures at our state capital, so that Californians will continue to see this year as the time that we want to have change in terms of the way our state's run.
We're speaking with California Assemblyman and candidate for Congress Kevin Kiley, who you can get online at electkevinkiley.com and follow on Twitter at KevinKileyCA. One of the things that drives people crazy and has driven people crazy, and I'm sure you've heard about this ad nauseum as you campaign up and down the state, is that the hypocrisy of our elected leaders, whether it was Gavin Newsom, who shut down the restaurants and had that very expensive dinner at the French Laundry, or Sheila Kuehl here in Los Angeles County, who voted to shut down the restaurants and was caught that night at her favorite neighborhood Italian joint. Eric Garcetti wanted all of us to wear the mask, yet shows up to NFL games without the mask and claims that he was holding his breath, so he was incapable of contracting the virus, so it was okay for him to do that. Barbara Ferrer, who is the fake doctor, director of the public health department here in Los Angeles.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Has been one of those voices who's been beating the drum on all of these policies that have been coming out of Sacramento and City Hall and county government for years since this pandemic began, was recently speaking at a panel at the University of Southern California about the vaccines and said the following.
If I stand up and I acknowledge that vaccines don't work so great at preventing infections while I'm trying to get more people to get vaccinated, you could see why people are saying, well, don't share that information. Don't tell people. And I feel like, well, that is the worst strategy ever, because everybody knows the vaccines aren't working so great.
We'd get canceled if we said that. yet this woman is in charge of the Department of Public Health in Los Angeles County, and when she thinks no one's listening, this is what she says. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, well, she has presided over one of the worst, if not the worst, COVID response in the entire country. It has never in that county been based on anything resembling science. I mean, they have taken what Newsom has done and they've gone even further. They've tried to get extra credit. You know, they banned outdoor dining in that county. And what's the result? I mean, their kids have been out of school longer than anywhere. What's the result been, by the way? They have some of the worst COVID outcomes in California. I think they have the third or fourth worst COVID outcomes of any of the 58 counties. Whereas, you know, by contrast, in my county, Placer County, we pretty much ignored Newsom as much as we could from nearly the beginning of this. And we have among the best, far better outcomes than L.A. County does. And so that is sort of the legacy of this public health director and the very radical and, you know, just probably corrupt in many ways supervisors on the L.A. County Board of Supervisors. That's what they have delivered. They've delivered, you know, the worst education outcomes, the worst economic outcomes, and some of the worst public health outcomes through their radical and unscientific policies.
As I mentioned before, you are a candidate for Congress in the suburbs of Sacramento. I would imagine you're meeting with people in Washington, D.C., looking at the poll numbers, those sorts of things on a regular basis. What do you think the odds are, given the low approval ratings of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and the Democratic majority? What do you think the odds are that Nancy Pelosi is Speaker of the House in January of next year?
I think they're extremely low. I think that we're poised to have a strong majority in the House, although that's only going to happen, you know, if we make it happen. So I think that folks who are, you know, looking to change our state and our country, it's very important that we all work hard to get the message out, to get out the vote, to persuade undecided voters and to make the case for change this November.
And do you believe there will be legislative pickups in California?
I do. I think that we have opportunities to get major gains at every level of government, to get good, strong conservatives elected, starting at school boards, it's a local government, and in the legislature and in Congress. I think we absolutely have opportunities at every level.
Assemblyman Kevin Kiley, candidate for Congress in the suburbs of Sacramento. You can follow him on Twitter at KevinKileyCA and get him online at electkevinkiley.com. Assemblyman Kevin Kiley, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thanks, John. Always great to be with you.
The Vice President of the United States and the former United States Senator from the state of California, Kamala Harris, announced today that she tested positive for the Rona.
We are clear and have been clear.
And they made sure to let us know that she wasn't in close contact with Joe Biden, which is very believable considering he hates her guts.
That's right. They haven't actually been publicly together since the Easter egg roll. And then he sent her to California for a week to bother us, including anybody that lives on the West Side because she has that stupid house in Brentwood.
How long was your commute that day?
An hour.
Oh, dear. Well, there's a new book that's coming out that seems to have a lot of great gossip items about politicians in Washington, D.C., including a bunch of golden nuggets about Kamala Harris.
That's right. There are a lot of things coming out in this book. Some things that we already pretty much knew, like Dr. Jill Biden did not like the idea of Kamala Harris being vice president. We're not really sure who exactly thought it was a good idea, but Joe wasn't on board and Jill wasn't on board.
No, it was Ron Klain. It was his chief of staff. He was the one who was pushing for Kamala. Other people, including Rahm Emanuel, one of that woman from Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer, she's got her own bag of problems. The senator from Illinois, Tammy Duckworth, was also on the short list, but Biden told her he didn't want her because she was born in Thailand and thought that there would be a birther controversy over whether or not she was qualified, constitutionally qualified, to be vice president, and she got pissed at him over that. But Ron Klain, the chief of staff, was the one who told Joe Biden that Kamala Harris was the most qualified person in the country to be vice president, and somehow this guy hasn't been canned yet.
How do you think Karen Bass feels when she sees Kamala Harris screwing it up on a national scale, knowing that she was up for that job too?
Well, how about the rest of them? If you're Gretchen Whitmer and you're told that she is more competent than you, well, what does that make you?
So here's another fun passage from this New York Times book from Jonathan Martin and Alexander Burns. Back in a meeting with senators in May to try to get the infrastructure package through, Kamala Harris reportedly thought, wait, there's something missing from this conversation. Why are we talking about infrastructure when we could be talking about family and social spending? And that pissed off President Joe Biden.
Well, he served in the Senate before he was vice president and before he was elected president. So he knows what Joe Manchin's thinking. He knows what Kyrsten Sinema's thinking. He knows what the Republicans are thinking. And what he was trying to do with infrastructure is he was trying to make it a big bipartisan bill so he could have bipartisan support and show the public that he was bringing the parties together. By going in there and asking for all kinds of ridiculous things, he knew he would alienate moderate Democrats and all of the Republicans. And instead of sticking to the plan, she went off on her own direction, sticking her fingers in everyone's eyes.
Quote, Biden dismissed her comment immediately. Even Republican senators were taken aback by his harsh tone.
Well, what are you supposed to do if you're Joe Biden? First of all, he probably couldn't even hear her. Second of all, to the extent that he understood what she was doing, she's trying to circumvent what he's the purpose of that meeting. When your own team is working against you, when your own team isn't on the same page, you have to shut it down right away. Otherwise, everyone in the room is going to walk out with the completely wrong impression.
Another take from the book is Maryland Governor Larry Hogan talked about meeting Biden and Harris in one of these meetings among governors, and he thought Kamala Harris's role in these meetings was very strange. Quote, she did not say a word. She just kind of stood there. Wasn't sure if she was just being deferential to the president, didn't want to step on him, or there was some other dynamic at play.
Well, I don't know how much stock I'd put in that. Have you ever seen Larry Hogan on TV?
I have not.
He looks like a pig. And by that, I don't mean the guy's just sloppy. I mean the guy literally, facially, looks like Porky the Pig.
Too many crab cakes?
I don't know what he's doing over there in Maryland, but he looks like a pig.
Now, here's my favorite take from this whole book. Kamala Harris's aides were very unhappy. They didn't think that she was getting the respect that she deserved, and they were very upset about the fact that she was chosen to be the liaison to the southern border as her policy assignment.
Hold off for 1 second before you get to the payoff of this story. They were upset because they don't feel like she's getting the respect that she deserves. That is straight up a line out of Mommy Dearest.
Harris worried that Biden staff looked down on her. She fixated on real perceived snubs in ways the West Wing found tedious.
I'm telling you, if Ronald Reagan was the nation's grandpa, she is the nation's ex-wife.
In another section, the authors explain that Harris's aides were unhappy she was given the southern border as a policy assignment, and they pushed instead for her to be made the liaison to the Nordic countries.
Oh, great. Because we're at risk at going to war with Norway.
Staff floated the possibility of the vice president overseeing relations with the Nordic countries, a low-risk diplomatic assignment that might have helped Harris get adjusted to the international stage in welcoming venues like Oslo and Copenhagen.
Here is what she wanted. She wants a job that has zero substance. All she wants to do are ceremonial activities. Because if she does ceremonial activities, she gets none of the blame of any of their policy failures. And with none of the blame of the policy failures, she will have these laudatory articles written about her in all the major papers where they talk about how she breaks all the barriers. She's the first woman. She's the first Asian. She's the first black woman to ever be vice president of the United States. And isn't that great? And isn't that wonderful? And shouldn't we be celebrating that? And she would then manipulate the national press into behaving like the California press. The California press does not report on anything that our politicians actually do. They report on who they are and biographical information because they are obsessed with identity politics. They're obsessed with gender. They're obsessed with race. They're obsessed with religion. They're obsessed with sexual orientation, pronouns, all of that. And you can flash that shiny object and they will fall for it every single time. But if they report on what these people actually do, then we would know that the city of Los Angeles has failed entirely at the homeless crisis. We would know that the district attorney has failed at solving crime. We would know that the governor has failed us in virtually every...
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Category. But instead of covering those items, the items that actually matter to people's lives, they talk about the individuals instead. And you hear about the character in the play and not the plot. So Kamala Harris clearly does not have a good working relationship with Joe Biden. And Kamala Harris has shown her hand into cards as to how she would run for president as a candidate. Any challenge to her as a candidate, if Joe Biden were not to run for re-election, would be seen by her and her allies as an act of sexism and racism.
Oh, boy.
That's the direction that she's going to go in. So unless it's someone like Tammy Duckworth, or even, oh, I don't know, Gretchen Whitmer, expect those charges to be lobbed at Mayor Pete and any other Democrat, Gavin Newsom, that dares to challenge her in a Democratic primary.
Doesn't matter how unsuccessful she would be in the primary, you can't challenge her.
Those are the rules that she's going to establish. You watch. And the Democratic Party is going to be put in an awful place because nominating her would be just completely suicidal. Not just suicidal, but Heaven's Gate level suicidal. Renominating Joe Biden is also dangerous. You know, at the level at which he's performing now, imagine what he's going to be like 2 years older. There aren't a lot of good options. But having her be the backup option is unbelievably toxic. And it's going to push a lot of their candidates who could theoretically get elected out of the race because they're not going to want to be called racist and sexist and everything that she'd call them because they're Democrats and they still want to get elected to some office. It's a real, real, real tricky, sticky situation that party's going to be in. And I, for one, am enjoying watching it. Some weeks ago, we did a story about this convenience station in Long Beach that keeps getting robbed.
If the cashier is dummy.
And it wasn't just that the cashier is dummy was getting robbed on the inside. What they were doing is they were bringing trucks to the gas station and they were attaching a hose to the ground and they were stealing the gas out of the ground.
And cashier wasn't paying attention because...
If the cashier is dummy.
Well, apparently there's a restaurant in Corona that is similar to the gas station in Long Beach, and this restaurant just gets robbed again and again and again and again.
They must have really good tacos.
For more on this, here's KTLA.
As if it's not hard enough keeping a business running these days, a Mexican restaurant in Corona can't get a break from relentless crooks that keep breaking in and causing extensive damage. At this point, the owners say there isn't anything left to steal, but the burglars keep coming back.
KTLA 5's Chris Wolf joins us live with the latest on this story. Chris.
Yeah, Sharon, Micah, this is just a hardworking family.
Have you noticed that Michael Ullman is sounding a lot more like Paul Moyer every day?
Well, that's his what, uncle or father?
I think it's his father.
There you go.
Yeah, Sharon, Micah, this is just a hardworking family trying to make a living. The son tells me the restaurant business is tough enough with daily responsibilities, and these crimes are just added stress. Security footage shows hooded thieves smashing glass and breaking into a Mexican restaurant in Corona, scrambling for cash and valuables. Intruders have busted through not once, not twice, but four times within the last 10 months. In fact, that's...
What could you possibly steal from a taco stand? The shells?
Hey, they got repeat customers.
Guess they really like the tacos.
In fact, that's how long the family-owned business has been open. The first break-in at Mi Tierra Mexican Restaurant happened in September. Thieves struck again in March and then twice in April. There's no cash to grab, but they don't know the register is empty.
From that second one on, when you take everything, we already had been taking the money home. We never leave money there. But we also learned, you know, the iPads are valuable too. If they see them, they're going to take them. So we have to take them and then bring them back the next day.
There may be nothing to raid in the register, but the trail of destruction left behind with each crime is costing the owners thousands of dollars to repair.
Are there any competing Mexican restaurants in the same general area in Corona?
And do they have excess napkin dispensers?
It just sucks when, you know, someone comes in and breaks in, makes a mess, tries to take whatever it is that we have, you know, because we worked hard for it. So it's upsetting. It's stressful, too.
Galvez tells us the restaurant is equipped with a security system, including cameras and an alarm. But thieves are not deterred, moving quickly with each strike.
To the people that are doing this, just know that, you know, we're not rich by any means. So the things that you do affect us.
It's a fair point. Maybe aim a little higher.
There is a bank in my neighborhood that's been robbed 3 times in the last 3 months. Every time I go for a morning run and I go by it, I see something new boarded up. But this is what happens. You have the same crooks that go in and hit the same restaurants over and over and over again, the same banks over and over and over again. The cashier is dummy, gas station over and over and over again.
If the cashier is dummy.
Because they feel totally emboldened. I don't believe these crooks feel 1% worried that they're going to get caught doing what they're doing.
Well, apparently they've done it 4 times and they're going to keep going.
Well, at a certain point, even the crooks realize there's nothing left to steal. You'd think after 4 times knocking off the same taco stand, the light bulb would go off.
How many of those little tiny 1-inch ramekins of salsa could you possibly steal?
Well, you know, avocados are expensive, so maybe that's what they're stealing. But they go bad pretty fast, so you better eat them.
That's why they have to keep going back. By the time they've stolen the avocado and they got home, the avocado is already spoiled.
If you own that restaurant after the 4th time that they've robbed you in 10 months, and you're pulling into work, and you see the place looks like it's been through a DEA raid, and you know there's nothing in there for them to steal, do you get mad and start swearing and kicking and punching things, or do you just kind of throw your hands up in the air and go, not again?
At what point do you call your commercial realtor and say, did you know anything about this neighborhood before you told me to put a lease on this place?
Well, at what point does your insurance company call you and say, we're not doing business with you anymore? You need to go to a better part of town.
If the cashier is dummy.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.